please, to all vote 5.
Adopt the fiscal year 2017-18 fall supplemental budget and make other budget-related changes.
Colleagues, before us we have the fall budget monitoring process, otherwise known as the fall bump. I want to thank all of you and your staffs for your active participation and partnership in ensuring that this process is both collaborative and productive. I believe we're putting forward a balanced approach to budgeting with an eye to the future. The city continues to benefit from a strong economy, allowing us to make additional investments in urgent priorities. For example, about $6 million in funding will go towards capital projects, including a major investment to replace the unsafe 42nd Avenue Bridge. Nearly $2 million are going towards addressing homelessness, including finding funding to build year-round shelter that will keep people from experiencing homelessness safe and off the streets, and $2 million to ensure that we have an adequate number of police on the street to engage in proactive community policing, which is one of the goals both of the settlement agreement with the federal government. It is also a critical component of 21st century policing. I'd like to invite Andrew Scott up from the City Budget Office to walk us through the fall bump. Good morning,
great.
Director
thank,
Scott.
Thank you, Mayor. Andrew Scott, City Budget Director, and I'm joined here by Jess Eden, who is the city's supplemental budget coordinator. So I will be pretty brief this morning. We held a council work session on October 17th, where we went through the details of this supplemental budget process. Today, what I'm going to cover is just a few of the key changes from that work session until now. And of course, I'm happy to answer any questions about anything that's in here. So just as a reminder for the overall context, we ended last fiscal year with an excess balance of $11.8 million in the general fund. This is mainly the result of higher revenues and also somewhat slightly lower expenses than projected. For context, this is what we would consider a normal surplus in a $600 million general fund during an economic expansion. So, again, when things are really good and we do forecast conservatively, we expect to have a little bit extra at the end of the year, and $11.8 million is right in the area we would anticipate. Per council policy, half of that $11.8 million gets set aside for major maintenance projects. That is being allocated in this supplemental budget. $4.9 million of that is going for the transportation's 42nd Avenue Bridge that the mayor mentioned. That is a bridge that's in very poor condition, actually failing condition, and poses some significant risks. So I think that's a good investment, and PBOT's going to find the rest of that money in their budget to do the entire project. $500,000 is being set aside at the Portland Communications Center for their uninterrupted power supply, and you may remember that failed a little while back, so this is a really key priority for the city as well. And then $500,000 for the Justice Center uninterrupted power supply as well. A full list of all of the ranked projects, included those that weren't funded in this round, is included in the packet that was filed. Outside of that capital set aside, there's $11.2 million in encumbrances that we discussed at the work session that are being carried over. That's a pretty standard practice in the fall bump. And then finally, there's $6.5 million of new requests, and those are also listed in attachment 2 of the packet. Of that $6.5 million of new requests, the largest allocations, $1.9 million for the Joint Office of Homeless Services, $650,000 of that is for operations, and $1.25 million of that is for permanent shelter capital costs. And then another large allocation, $2 million, is being set aside for police hiring, as the mayor mentioned, to avoid a dip in officer positions as we move forward. The other items that are new from the work session, again, I'm not going to go through the exhaustive list, but just to mention the items that are new, $350,000 is being added for an additional round of special appropriations grants. $50,000 is being added for Prosper Portland for a Hillblock investment. $100,000 for Apano for continuing our commitment to their facility. $130,000 for the PSEP, which is the follow-up to the COAB, part of the Justice Settlement Agreement. And then finally, a reduction of $346,000 of funding for the deputy chief position. The position is still being included in this supplemental budget, but the police bureau is being asked to find that funding internally. One other thing to mention outside of the general fund, we have added three positions at the Bureau of Development Services for the communications team there. After all is said and done, we will end, assuming council adopts this supplemental budget, with just under $2.1 million of general fund contingency for the rest of the year, which is roughly in line with where we've been in prior years at this time. And I'm happy to answer any questions about this bond.
Commissioner Fritz.
Just one minor one that caught my eye under special appropriations, and I appreciate how those are pulled out separately. What's the $6,300 for Commissioner Staff Representative reclass? Sorry to put you on the spot.
That's okay. That is for the Domestic Violence Center reclassification, correct, Jess?
I think that's actually for OYVP, which falls under special appropriations.
A what?
The
Office of Youth Office Violence
of
Prevention.
Youth Violence Prevention. So in, I think, approximately 2 weeks ago, council passed a resolution to create a new classification for staff representatives, and there were a total of 12 positions that had the potential to be reclassified, and one of them does follow under the special appropriations, so YVP.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Of course.
Can I just clarify one thing, Commissioner Fritz and Budget Office? There's, I think, $125,000 or something for we've added for, I think, three different partners of the Parks Bureau, including Leech Botanical Garden. It's bundled, but I understand that Leech's ask was $25,000. So is that fully covered in that figure?
Yes, Commissioner. It's at the bottom of page 2 of 3, at the back where it's all summarized. And it's $25,000 for Leech Botanical Gardens because the bridge near there blew out and the city wasn't able to repair it quickly, so they lost a lot of revenue because the bridge provided access to their parking lot. And then the other is $100,000 for Pioneer Courthouse Square, who delayed their implementation of the bond project until after the protests in January, which then pushed out the end of the construction into the summer, which is their main time to get revenue.
Thank you very much. And this also includes the additional amount that Prosper Portland is contributing, the amount of $100,000 for Apano?
Correct.
Thank you.
So I see a number of special appropriations. Age-friendly, DACA, participatory budget conference, Lent stabilization creation. So I thought our special appropriations process was now all competitively funded, that we set aside $1 million, we let all comers make a pitch to our committee, and then we make decisions. So I guess I'm surprised to see sort of these other ones, which I assume are not coming out of that $1 million.
That's correct. They are not coming out of that $1 million. As part of this year's budget, council did set aside, and actually last year's budget as well, some funding for competitive grants, and there is an additional $350,000 in this for competitive grants. There are also special appropriations that don't go through that process, and those are listed here.
Oh, there's another piece of history that's important here.
I guess I didn't know that.
Dan, you and I both have representatives to the committee that evaluates special appropriations. When the age-friendly ask came up, the sense of the committee, as reported back to me, was it should not be competing with these other special appropriations because the age-friendly action plan is something we've adopted and said we're going to support annually. So it was the consensus view of our representatives that we take that particular ask out of the special appropriations and fund it as a freestanding ask. And and it's consistent with what we've done every year in supporting some portion of their implementation of the action plan that we developed, and we designated them as our partner.
And so, I would just add to that we did pass the resolution, the DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. That was an emergency measure that we passed as a council in September to address the very short deadline for people who are currently in the system for that program to be able to apply to reapply before the president cut it off. So that came in after we had had the special appropriations process. I actually share your concern, Commissioner, about some of the others that seem like they were not approved by council, and yet they also didn't go through the special appropriations committee. So what can anybody else tell me about any of the others?
Well, PSEP, previously the COCO-COAB, has fallen underneath special appropriations since it was transferred out of other bureaus and consolidated. And so this particular package is to support a directive given by council so that they could restructure the board. And this is going to help them with that effort. As far as the participatory budgeting conference, that $6,000 was submitted after the requested budgets, and it seemed like the most appropriate place to put it, and it's for a conference so that there can be more of an effort towards participatory budgeting.
And why did that not go through special appropriations, the committee that Commissioner Fish mentioned?
I think that's it's a council decision in terms of whether it's called out separately or goes through that process.
And the Lent Stabilization Program, that's a carryover. So that's
there's a carryover there and plus some additional funding as well. The Lent Stabilization Program has been a special appropriation, so it's kind of an existing program, and there is both a carryover there and some additional funding.
And you mentioned a $350,000 going back into special appropriations rather than being for Portland United Against Hate. Where does that show up anywhere here?
So the very last line on Exhibit 4, and shows them some other places as well, the competitive grants funding. So that's an additional $350,000 being allocated to special appropriations that my understanding there will be another competitive grant process.
So we're looking at about $6.6 million in new spending in this fall bump. Have we ever done that amount of new spending in a bump before, in a budget adjustment process?
Yes. I think over the last few years, we've had some pretty significant excess balances. Again, half goes to capital, and then the other half gets allocated out. I would have to go back historically to look at each year in terms of how much gets allocated out versus how much gets budgeted in contingency.
Okay. I mean, it just begs the question to me. I mean, it seems to me new funding requests should be dealt with in our one comprehensive budget process, not the three that happened through the budget adjustment, in my belief. I realize there's always some exceptions to that rule, but $6.6 million in new spending seems like a lot through a sort of a budget adjustment process. And then my final question is there is a zeroing out of in the police bureau for walking beats of $200,000, I guess. I mean, that seems like we're going in the wrong direction. I thought we were supporting walking beats.
So that was a request for additional funding. That's not reflective of the decision. I think the decision to maintain those walking beats stands. It was just the police bureau had asked for some additional funding for overtime for that.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Any questions before we move to public testimony? Director Scott, is there anything else before we move to testimony? Very good. How many people do we have signed up, Carla?
10.
Anybody else who's not on the list? We have two more people. Could you please sign up? And it looks like Lightning would like to sign up, and then we'll close the list, please.
Okay.
Please call the first three.
First three, please, coming up are Jason Nishikawa, Lisa Ortquist, and Travis Decker.
And sir, you raised your hand. Please do sign up. Thank you. 3 minutes. Name for the record, please.
I'm Jason Nishikawa, CPA and principal at Urban & Company CPAs. I'm also a board member of the Gateway Area Business Association. We're here to talk about the increased crime in the area. Urban & Company has been a CPA firm in Portland for since the mid-80s, in the Gateway District since 1994. And in the past year, personally, we've seen an increase in crime, kind of significant crimes in the area, including our mailbox being broken into, windows being broken, external doors being broken in an attempt to enter the building. Also, car windows being broken during the day hours, stealing personal items from there, and also stealing one of our ladders, entering our neighbor's building through the roof, taking off the HVAC system, shimmying through the ductwork to enter that building. So those have been concerns of ours, the increase in crime. So we just wanted to, as business owners, explain the impact of that and also that it has been impacting our employees not wanting to be there early and late. We have to lock our front door during business hours, which kind of conveys a message to some of our clients who come from around the country to visit our firm. And so we just wanted to testify that it is impacting our business, and we have a few other members that will kind of talk more about how they've been impacted, and then also kind of the ask that the Gateway Business Association has for increasing some patrol and just enforcing current laws in the area.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Lisa Orquist. I'm also have a CPA firm in the Gateway area at 100 Northeast 112th and Halsey, and I have 12 employees in my team. I own the building there as well. We've been there for 20 years. And to reiterate what Jason was saying, we're just seeing increased crime and challenges in our area, and things like suspicious activity in our parking lots, or people peeking in our windows after hours, breaking into our cars, employees not feeling safe when they're leaving after dark, so what I've noticed in the 20 years that I've been in the area is that there, over that time, there have been, back when we had the county occupying the building at 122nd and Gleason, that they would often, the sheriff's department would stop in at businesses, kind of be seen in the area, more presence there. And also we used to have some more City of Portland police patrols that were, would stop in and see how things were going, just be in the area, kind of letting people know that they were around. And just recently we've seen a few more patrols in the area, and that's helped out a lot. So thank you for sending more patrols in the area, because it really does make a difference.
Thank you. Good morning.
My name is Travis Decker, and I own a hybrid and electric auto repair shop on 102nd and Gleason. And I recently moved, I guess, almost 12 months ago. Sold my real estate at 25th and Sandy and moved out into the Gateway area and joined the board of the Gateway Business Association. And it's been interesting for me because my business is a destination, and I've had numerous customers. I mean, my customers came with me, 80 blocks out to the east side. But several of them, they come in, they're like, we don't feel safe coming at night and walking the four blocks to the Gateway Transit Center to use public transportation. I mean, it's just been very interesting for me to see the difference between 25th and Sandy and 102nd and Gleason, and how, after talking to several of the police officers about it and finding out more, it just seems like there's sort of been a pervasive for a long time. It's like nobody cares. And that people realize that nobody cares, and that I actually talked to a couple officers who were at my business this week about something else, and they were like, we just don't have the ability to do anything. We can't get these RVs out of here if they're in the right of way. And I know it's a complicated issue, but I think it's interesting to see those two different sides of Portland and feel like now my business, which is, I employ 10 people, we fix electric cars, we move to the east side, and it's affecting our business in a way that it just is interesting to see the difference. And I just think that there needs to be, I know it's a very complicated situation, however, it's affecting us, and it sucks to feel like we're now in like this armpit of the city that nobody really, cares about, because it's an up and coming neighborhood and there's new businesses like me moving there as gentrification pushes us out.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony. Commissioner
Pritz. Just so you know that I do care, my parents-in-law live in Gateway, so I'm there often, and I share some of your concerns, so I'm sure the mayor will pass it along to the police bureau.
Part of the goal here, the increase that I'm requesting for the police bureau, is so we can have more foot patrols in the community and get people out of their cruisers. We want more of a presence. We know that both reduces opportunistic crime and it builds community trust. And it's the original model for policing, is get people communicating and talking with each other, getting to know the people in the community who live there, going to the community meetings, and being present. And so that is one of my objectives here today. Thank you for your
testimony.
Thank
you, sir. That's very much appreciated.
Next three, please.
Next three are Jack Hagan, Nadal Call, and Portland National Lawyers Guild.
Good morning.
Good morning. start?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Jack Hagan. I'm the president of Northwest Fly Fishing Outfitters, located in Gateway. We're a small family business that will celebrate our 25th year this May. We've been in the Gateway area for almost 16 of those, and we're a destination business, meaning we pull customers from all over the metro area, the country, and quite honestly, the world of people coming to Oregon to fish. When we first made the decision to move to Gateway, there was this big promise of the downtown east, this whole re-gentrification of Gateway. 16 years later, it's not there, and the future is very dim. I'm going to go out on a limb here and make a few assumptions. Probably none of you on this commission have to pick up human feces weekly. You most likely don't have to pull up in front of your office and find people sleeping in your parking space or rummaging through your garbage. When was the last time you had to run off a person who was urinating in your bushes or stealing water from your outdoor faucet? I'd be willing to bet that if a motorhome made camp in front of City Hall, it would be gone immediately. We don't get those kind of things out in East Portland. We get nothing but trouble. My customers and employees are harassed constantly for money, cigarettes, food, alcohol, etc. Sometimes it's threatening, but it's always making for an uncomfortable situation. Our store's been burgled, vandalized more times than I can count. I've spoken with many of the business owners in the district, and they're just as frustrated as I am. This has got to end. It's high time that this commission realizes that they're here to work for and to protect all taxpayers in the city. Because if you don't, businesses like mine will be forced to move, or they'll close down, resulting in less tax revenue. I'd be willing to bet that all of you have taken the time to listen to the stories of our homeless population. It's a big buzz right now. When was the last time you really listened to one of our officers out on the street? I do, and I can say most of them are great people who really care, but their hands are tied.
Again, folks, I said right up front, there will be opinions expressed here you do not agree with, but please do not act out verbally. You can do a thumbs down if you don't like it, or a thumbs up if you do. Let's treat everybody with respect, regardless of their opinion. That's the way we do things in this chamber. Continue, sir.
Thank you. We need to fund police, especially in East Portland and especially in the Gateway District. We need to have our neighborhood response teams back, working the street. And we can't tie their hands. We've got to allow them to enforce the laws that are already on the books. Quit stopping them from being able to enforce those laws. Let me conclude by imploring upon you that we need to have the changes made here, specifically more police presence. I would love to have my employees and customers feel safe and secure at my store and the neighboring businesses. This commission has the ability and the power to make these changes we need in Gateway, and I'm asking that you do so. Thank you for your time this morning, and I would invite any of you to contact me in the future if you'd like to discuss these matters further.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Nadal Call. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. I'm the owner of Furniture Plus in the Gateway District. I'm also the current president of the Gateway Area Business Association. Thank you again for giving all of us the opportunity to come in and testify today. At Furniture Plus, you know, we're on 103rd, and we've experienced the same sort of challenges that my colleagues have described. So I'll spare you additional details on that, and I just kind of want to sum it up with some statistics. Gateway has 1,401 district businesses that provide 17,302 jobs. Gateway has suffered nearly 6,311 reported crimes just from August 2016 to August 2017. The Gateway District is one of the most diverse districts in the state of Oregon, and we need more resources to ensure our community is once again safe and prosperous for all of our members. We are asking specifically for increased foot patrols that have diminished over the years, increased presence of police cars in our district. Collectively, we'll need to partner to address the RV issues in our districts and neighboring districts. We need to address the vandalism in our district and increase the communication with the Gateway businesses, and a lot of these efforts have already been started. I'd like to thank Stacy Vu of the East Portland Crime Prevention Coordinator for attending our next luncheon to help with some of these communication efforts. A few weeks back, there was a meeting with Burke Nelson, of course, you know, Mayor Wheeler's office, which was very beneficial. And so I'd like to close with just an email that I received from my store manager, who was directly involved in that meeting. And he tells me, after the meeting last week, I personally saw a fast and drastic improvement in response to our requests. They may not have all been addressed, but every day this week, at least twice a day, police have patrolled the alleyway that we share on 103rd. In the past, this patrol unit was next to nearly non-existent. Noticeably this week, there has been significantly less illegal dumping by our recycle and trash bins next to our building. Truly, the response time and request was very impressive. I thought this would be good information to share. I was very happy to receive this communication. So I want to formally thank you on behalf of the Gateway Area Business Association and other business members who participated in that meeting that you're listening, and we'd like to continue this.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Good morning.
Hi, my name is Sarah Phillips. I'm with the Portland National Lawyers Guild. Before I begin, I just want to check in about some information. Somebody in the guild asked last week about why the reorganization doesn't work and why you need more money for this budget. And if you could send us that information to our email that we provided you.
Are you referring to the new deputy position?
Yes.
Under this proposal before us, the police bureau would have to find the funds one within the bureau. They will not be given additional funds. So if this position goes forward, they would have to fund it from existing resources. That's currently in the bump before us.
Okay, thank you.
In other words, we're telling them if they want it badly enough, they can prioritize it with the resources.
All right, I'm just asking for more information to be sent.
Sure.
But I have a testimony to.
Okay, thank you.
So the Portland chapter of the National Lawyers Guild is an organization strongly supporting the prioritization of investment in communities as an alternative to increased criminalization and policing. For a city amid affordability crisis, among many other crises, shifting funds to the police would detract from other city programs that enhance safety without increasing policing. Fundamentally, we believe the decision to expand the police force should be made within the context of all citywide budgeting priorities. The NLG therefore believes a supplemental budget proposal is an inappropriate tool for consideration of police force expansion, as well as for staffing and multi-year funding decisions. Rather, any such budget request should be considered in the context of the fiscal year 18 and 19 budget developmental process. First, the request overcompensates for project retirements. In fall 2016, 335 officers were available for patrol. In 2016-17, the police hired 39 more officers than it did the prior years. At current funding and projected retirements in 2018 at mid-year, there are likely to be 355 officers available for patrol. Assuming no additional funding or hiring, that is an additional 20 officers up from last year. By the Bureau's own projections, by the end of the calendar year, there will be no sworn vacancies. There are no significant project retirements for fiscal year 2019 and 20, such that the request should be considered via a fall supplemental budget rather than within the fall 2018-19 budget development process. Second, there is no increase in crime to warrant an additional budget increase. The Bureau anticipates hiring 59 new officers this year and was further authorized in the 2014-15 fall to hire 10 more officers. The Bureau has already negotiated a pay increase to hire new people. This has led Portland, according to Deputy Chief Davis in Portland Tribune article on November 6, becoming a competitive city for police hires. Even if response times are higher in low to medium priority calls, we should not increase the budget to the police to solve these types of issues. In particular, we should point to the November 6th Portland Tribune article, again, where Deputy Chief Davis cited a slow response for a suicidal caller as a reason to increase the budget for new hires. But why should we increase the budget responses to such a call, especially given the police record with responding to persons going through a mental health crisis? That money would be better allocated to community-based solutions. The police perpetually claims it's in a staffing crisis, but provides no real substantiation of how many officers it needs and why. It is our position that these critical funds be allocated for services that are extended to the police. external to the police, I'm sorry. We fully support the position that such funding should be invested in the community. We want more funding for affordable housing, education, mental health care resources, especially for those experiencing mental health crisis. We want unarmed people trained to harm reduction to response to calls that have resulted in Portland police officers shooting and killing people who need help.
Could we just respond? Because you're continuing down the road, and we do have your written testimony. I just want to be clear that we're not allocating more money to the police in this, I agree with you. It should be in the regular process.
We also take issue with the costly rehire program, which has led to Portland cops being hired back for full elevated salaries while they collect their Portland retirement pay. The rehire program has allowed officers to double dip payments for retiring and receiving retirement benefits and then be rehired and get a paid salary. Absent an urgent critical need for these retired and rehired limited term contracts, retired and rehire contracts are unnecessarily costly to the city. The NLG believes any overtime hires should be funded via established vacancy savings rather than through additional funding from the council. Third, the police should not allocate funds from its current budget to create the requested deputy chief position. The Bureau should restructure internally.
I'm sorry, we're 4.5 minutes in. Are you close to wrapping it up? We do have your written.
Yeah, I just have like this last paragraph.
Okay, go for it.
Sorry. As it has in the past, in order to create the requested new deputy chief position rather than receiving additional funding. Such restructuring was done in 2016 after Chief Marshman assumed office and eliminated the fourth assistant chief role for the community service branch. Fourth, even assuming there is an urgent need to overhire in 2018 retirements, requesting funding for expansion beyond 2018 would remain unnecessary. The budget review process is an appropriate context within which to evaluate long-term staffing decisions, allowing the council to weigh requests against the citywide priorities and funding needs. In conclusion, the budget's own projections, all sworn vacancies will be filled by the end of the calendar year. There is no urgency arising from projected retirements nor an increase in crime to justify a consideration of a budget expansion within the fall supplement, particularly in light of the affordable housing crisis and affordability. The NLG believes budgeting priorities must be considered within the full context of the fiscal year 2018-19 budget process. Further, the NLG believes any deputy chief position should be funded within the existing budget as it has in the past. The NLG, along with numerous community orgs, views the requested substantial increase in policing budget as unnecessary as a misguided divergent of resources from community development programs in dire need.
Thank you. We get the point. Thank you. Appreciate it. Next three, please.
R. Eli, Richie, Maria, minutes, Boyer, folks. And Addison. And I can't read the last name. Sorry.
Hey, Ted.
Yeah.
We have about 3 hours left of council. Would you please enforce the rules?
Yeah. So, folks, we have a long agenda and lots of people waiting for future agenda items. So I'm going to be a little bit harsher about the 3 minutes. Please keep it to 3 minutes. And when you hit 3 minutes, I'll ask you to wrap it up. So whatever your final thought is at that point, please just state it. Good morning.
Morning. My name is Maria Boyer. I'm a teacher here in Portland, and I am with the Mental Health Care Not Policing Community Coalition. I would like to echo much of what Sarah Phillips from the NLG has said, but with much more to add. The Mental Health Care Not Policing Community Coalition unequivocally opposes any increase in the Portland Police Bureau's allocated budget, including the upwards of $3 million being requested during this fall budget adjustment. An increase in budgetary funding of this size deserves a much higher level of analysis and oversight from the CBO, in addition to increased time and opportunity for community input and public testimony. Long-term staffing decisions, as the City Budget Office has advised, should not be made during midterm budget adjustments, but rather during the budget development process of the fiscal year 2008-2019. An increase in budgetary funding of this size deserves a much higher level of analysis and oversight, which has been unavailable in this process. It is crucial that there be increased time and opportunity for community input and public testimony. The PPB has perpetually alleged a staffing crisis, though it was allocated sufficient funds to fill the vast majority of staffing vacancies last year. Again, however, the PPB is claiming it needs $3 million more dollars to hire or rehire 85 more officers with no real substantiation of the claim. The Portland Police Bureau's priorities do not align with the residents of Portland's priorities. We are not kept safe through policing. We are kept safe through funding for adequate and accessible housing, education, health care, transportation, and other community resources in critical need of additional funding. The projected rates of retirement are expected to be less than the hiring rate, resulting in an overall personnel increase. Why do they want to expand the police force when there hasn't been an overall increase in crime? We do not need police responding to things like mental health crises. This is where we need funding for civilian-led response that center harm reduction, the agency of those in crisis, and that won't result in use of force against vulnerable people. Retiring officers do not need to be replaced by new ones. Rather, we demand a reduction in both spending and personnel within the police bureau. We don't want to increase or maintain policing. We want to reduce its role in our lives. Instead of moving the number of patrol officers closer to the unnecessary realm of 400, the council and the bureau should actively be reducing the number of officers. We know that increased policing does not equal increased safety. By rediverting funds away from policing, we want to invest in community-based resources and alternatives that specialize in mental health, build up people's capacity to know their options when dealing with a crisis, and strengthen our ability to rely on each other. Ultimately, we should want to make policing obsolete. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Hi, my name is Addison. When we as a community continually cause unnecessary, needless harm on our community, it is important that we engage with this harm in order to seek out how to prevent further harm and resist causing more needless harm. I am here today to read a statement written by Donna Hayes, the grandmother of Quanis Hayes. Quanis Hayes was a black boy who was murdered by the Portland Police Bureau in February of this year. As we understand that this moment is not a moment we want to be repeated in any way in the future, it is time for us to take a step back from policing as a community. It is time for those who say that they protect our community to reflect on the ways in which they have explicitly continued to do the opposite. When our concept of protecting our community leads to committing murder, it is not time to push forward, but time to step back. Much as when your body is wounded or not working with you, you must step back and rest before continuing to move. In stepping back, reflecting, and trying to heal, the best thing that we can do as a community is to center the needs of the most vulnerable and the most affected, as they are the ones that are the most aware of and the most experienced with our communal deficiencies. This is why, despite her not being here today, I beg you to open your heart to the words, open the heart of the community to the words of someone who needlessly lost her grandson at the hands of our community. Again, these are the words of Donna Hayes, the grandmother of Quanis Hayes, the black boy murdered by the police bureau that is asking for more money, more positions, and more resources today. Greetings. I disagree with adding more money to the police department for more untrained people to help these untrained individuals equip themselves as a small army. The money you are proposing should go to other departments or for training and reform. By reform, I am saying, for example, adding a separate agency to perform drug testing. These employees have immense responsibility and control over sensitive safety information. We as citizens of this beautiful city, we cannot prove that these so-called random drug tests are really being done. You supposedly hired Outlaw to help bring the community and the police together. So hand us something like a separate agency to be responsible for doing these random tests, as well as requiring a test after shootings and legitimate complaints. Why would you give police officers who are too quick to shoot and beat a person the benefit of the doubt? Ask Quanis Hayes, Terrell Johnson. Oh, sorry, you can't ask them. On February 9th of this year, there were two shootings, both involving replica guns. One ended in the death and one ended in prison. Why was this so? Didn't they both need due process? Or do they even know what due process is? What was the difference between the two? Training is a real necessary item that the money is needed for. This force needs training in the difference between real dangers and perceived dangers. Ask Merle Hotch. He only had a telephone receiver, no real danger, but was killed. Or Aaron Campbell, a griever, no real danger, but was killed for it. You're going to, or Jeremy Christian, or Kendra. Now tell me they don't need training to understand the difference. Let us not forget all of these or the one in 2002 that resulted in a $65,000 settlement. You're going to give money to police who handled the recent Black Lives Matter. Could I please finish for the grandmother of Quanis Hayes, please? Okay. the recent Black Lives Matter and anti-Trump demonstrations. Really, remember how they handled the protesters against the police contract last year? Now there is a federal lawsuit for you. Training is clearly needed in handling your citizens' First Amendment rights. De-escalation is another place where training is needed. Instead of taking a situation and trying to do something that calms it, they send it spiraling out of control. Ask James Chass. Oh, you cannot ask him because the group you want to give money to beat him to death.
All right, thank you.
He was said to have schizophrenia. Do you know that doctors and nurses deal with people just like him daily? And they don't beat him to death?
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Next three, please.
Next three are Olivia Hassenkamp, Nathan Fisher, and Jordan Lennox.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Olivia. I am with the Mental Health Care Not Policing Coalition. I'm going to finish reading the statement that Addison was reading by Donna Hayes. Do you know that doctors and nurses deal with people just like him daily and they don't beat them to death? My problem is there are 950 sworn and 270 non-sworn employees who badly need training, not money for more positions to keep perpetuating the problem. Donna Hayes, grandmother of Qantas Hayes. Thank you. And I'm now going to read my own testimony. I'm with the Mental Health Care Not Policing Coalition. And I want to echo everything that Sarah and Maria and Addison just said. The police are not and will never be adequate mental health responders. They are trained to neutralize threat, not to de-escalate. And I will now give a personal telling of an old roommate that I had in college who had a series of mental health crises of which I was the only person to witness and respond to. I learned that my only option to get help was to call campus police. Because I was the only person carrying this for my roommate, I was desperate to find a way for my roommate to receive better health care than I was capable of giving, not to mention my own mental health being seriously impacted. So I called the campus police the next time medical assistance was needed. That's what they told me I had to do. This did not go over well with my roommate. They left us in our room after they had, quote, taken care of the problem. But she proceeded to threaten me with her life to ensure that I would never call them again. I say this because, like the city of Portland, my school did not have mental health services or response that did not involve the police. They only escalated and re-traumatized my roommate by being a physically and emotionally threatening body in a uniform. If we used all this money, $3.7 million, to fund real community-determined mental health services, adequate and fair housing, better transportation and education, we would have less mental health problems and would have much less need for police officers and responders. Thank you.
Thank you.
If I could just state once again, this proposal doesn't have any money for the police in it for those positions. So just we agree with the concern that it should be done in the budget process, and we should look at all the other services as well.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning. Nathan Fisher.
Thanks, Nathan.
My issue is I heard you speak of proactive policing, and immediately I just popped in my head, what will the criteria be? You know, these women put it so articulately, their concerns, I share a lot of them. And then we heard from the business owners, and it seems like they want to make being poor punishable by law. You know, and I don't feel like that's going to be adequate. That's going to create more problems than solutions. I mean, you're going to be locking people up in debtors' prisons, and they're going to have new problems to worry about. How about instead of investing these millions of dollars into hemming up poor people, we give them some help, and we focus on like actual community ways and building our community instead of these people who come in and, and decided, I mean, on my way here, I saw a bunch of police. They had free parking and all kinds of stuff, and now I have to, I'm like trying to rush out here because I got to go and put money in my meter so I can get out there. But we're not focusing on the people, and we're just focusing on like a police force. And I don't. What I'm worried about is them using these. It seems like the business class is using the police as a way of distancing the poor people from their communities and pushing them off into someplace else. And I didn't have anything prepared, and I know everyone's been pushing that 3-minute limit. I just want to express my concerns, and I hope you take everything with me listening. But I'll let the next group of people get in here so I can go and pay my ticket.
Thank you, sir. Thanks both of you for your testimony. Next three, please.
The last three are Jordan Lennox, Christina Cladis, and Lightning.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Super Watchdog X. Now, these new requests that you have here, several new items totaling $6.3 million have been included in Bureau budgets in the fall supplemental. So I'm glad you're saying you're not going to actually fund from this request. That's what you've stated. Don't fund the police. That's what you're not going to fund them in the fall budget. You're not going to fund them. No. Say no. Say no.
There's no funding for the ongoing police issues in this.
So you're not going to fund them in the next year.
That's not what we're discussing.
Say no. Okay.
That's not what we're discussing right now.
Well, that's what I'm discussing. Don't fund them in the next 12 months. No new hires, no funding for the police. If crime is down, there's no logical reason based upon the data to fund them. Charlie Hale sold out this city on giving them any pay raises. Charlie Hale sold out this city giving them pay raises during the settlement agreement. He is no longer here. And people that want to keep funding the police when crime is down will no longer be here. Issue number two, Mayor Wheeler, and I'll say this to you. Why are you sweeping all the people in tents on the sidewalks in this city to the east side? You are consistently sweeping them in an aggressive manner. And I'm not talking every 2 weeks. I'm talking every 3 to 5 days. This is being well coordinated, an effort put together behind the scenes, and you are sweeping them to the point they don't want to stay downtown. Why are you doing that? Why are you moving them all to the east side when maybe they don't want to? Maybe they want to stay downtown. And again, I've stated to you, start a pilot project. Look at least have the understanding of the data. Who are the people that have been 5 years chronic homeless out on concrete sidewalks and have not been put into housing, who have been left out, who have been traumatized? Give them some type of a cash grant. Each individual, a cash grant to them, and study and research if it benefits them in your pilot project. And when you hear these tech industry leaders saying we want to go universal basic income on a national level, have some research, have some data to show them, and then say take it up at a higher level, because you won't do it on a national level. That's why I'm asking for this pilot project to be put into place, to have the data to provide to the right people so everyone can have that type of income coming in, and they deserve it. You've traumatized them in this city. They deserve it after 5 years, and if anything, we'll come back with a class action suit to prove I'm right, and you'll pay it one way or the other at any time. So remember, universal basic income, cash grant to them, and give them something at this time because you can't provide housing. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hi, my name's Christina Cladis, and I'm a law student at Lewis and Clark, and I'm speaking on behalf of the NLG student chapter, the National Lawyers Guild. I'm here to talk about the budget. Budgets are an articulation of who and what we choose to invest in. The City Council should direct funds to true community-based efforts like prevention, intervention, treatment, education, and other programs that have actually been shown to promote healthier and stronger communities. Portland invests disproportionately in policing. I think Portland should instead invest in jobs and in education, which don't just make communities stronger, they make them safer. Investments in community-based drug and mental health treatment, education, universal pre-K, any other social institution can make the community safer. Those are just some examples of alternative funding that could be used instead of giving an extra budget to the police. Of course, Portland has limited funds, and I'm advocating for an investment strategy that actually reallocates funds from police into areas that we know will make us safer and in the long run would mean that we actually need less police. Thank you.
Thank you. Last word. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Jordan Lennox. I'm also representing the National Lawyers Guild student chapter at Lewis and Clark School. I've just come to reiterate and to support my colleague here. As the National Lawyers Guild, as an organization, we strongly support the prioritization of investment in communities as an alternative to increased criminalization and policing. For a city in an affordability crisis right now, among other things, we want to shift funds to more community-based organizations that would allow us to better be capable at dealing with the issues we have, rather than putting that money into policing. So the request overcompensates for project retirements, for projected retirements. And second, there is no increase in crime to warrant an additional budget increase whatsoever. The Bureau anticipates hiring 59 new officers this year and was further authorized to overhire 10 officers. And there is no basis for that in reality. We have shown that in our community, we can work together in order to solve these things. We don't need positions of power and authority over us telling us what we need to do. We can figure this out ourselves. We can do this ourselves. Third, the PPB should be asked to find money elsewhere to create the requested deputy chief position. We think, as far as this fourth deputy chief role for the community service branch, that it's not necessary. We understand that it's something that she's bringing from Oakland and something that she thinks she needs, but that money can be utilized in more progressive, more social programs for the city. And finally, even assuming there was an urgent need to overhire for the 2018 retirements, requesting funding for expansion beyond 2018 would remain unnecessary. The 18 to 19 budget review process is the appropriate context within which to evaluate long-term staffing decisions, allowing the council to weigh the request against other citywide priorities and funding needs. So,
thank you. Yeah. Appreciate your testimony, both of you. Commissioner Saltzman, do you have a question? Commissioner Fritz?
No, I have a question for Andrew Scott, if you could come
Director
back up.
Scott, could you come back up, please? Commissioner Fritz?
Thank you, Mayor. Actually, I have three questions. In looking at page 3 of 3 of Exhibit 4 on the Police Bureau, am I correct in saying that none of the positions being requested for succession planning, open space management, etc., there isn't any money going to those in this about to vote on?
So there is $2 million in this supplemental budget that is being set aside in general fund contingency for police staffing and hiring.
But it's not dedicated yet. But they're going to come back to us and say, let us know, and that will be part of the budget process.
So I think the intent here is that the police, as a result of that $2 million being set aside, will move forward with the necessary hiring that they need to in the current year. And they don't need the funding in the current year because they've got vacancy savings and other things, but they will need the funding next year. So the funding is being set aside so that they can engage in that over hiring. They would come back in this either the spring bump or the 18-19 budget process to request that allocation from contingency into the Police Bureau budget.
Thank you. That's what I understood. When I was looking onto this, I do see, though, that the mayor's proposed has the funding for the deputy chief position, and I'm wondering if that might be an error.
Yeah, and actually this testimony, and my apologies on this, there actually was a substitute amendment, substitute package that I think was sent around in the Tuesday memo yesterday, which I think, and
do I need to put
I
that
do
on
believe
the table?
We need to put that on the table. Right, my apologies for not raising that
move
earlier.
Move the substitute.
Second.
We have a motion and second.
And
could we call the roll on the substitute quickly?
I just want to check first before we do that. Does that substitute have the $350,000 for the special appropriations?
It does, yes.
Thank you. Then yes, thank you.
Sorry. Please call the roll on the substitute.
Udaley?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. Substitute.
And so in the substitute, the money for the deputy chief position is not allocated.
Correct. So all of the changes I walked through at the beginning are what was in that substitute. And again, my apologies for not flagging that.
Great. Thank you.
Any further questions? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Udaley.
Well, thank you, everyone, for presenting and giving your testimony today. It's tough when people come give passionate testimony about us, how we shouldn't do something that we're actually not doing.
Say no.
Don't interrupt me.
Say no.
So I'm happy with the decision around the police funding. I've expressed it previously. I'm going to express it again. I want to see those non-sworn administrative positions filled. I want to see how much pressure we can take off of our sworn officers by doing that hiring before we add. And I also want to know what the equation is, since we're not sticking to the old rule of thumb of 2 officers per 1,000 residents. What is the equation? And I agree that we need unarmed, well-trained people to address or assist people experiencing mental health crises. So I largely agree with you guys. We are not giving money today. Thank you for coming here. Aye.
Fritz.
Well, thank you for framing that, Commissioner Udaley. I agree when we're in agreement with what's been testified about, it's challenging on this particular issue. But I'm making very good points. I agree. I've been working on particularly the mental health care issue since I was a registered nurse at OHSU for 22 years and then on the council as part of the settlement agreement. We're certainly not where we need to be, and we are going to be looking at how to provide more resources in the proper budget, in the full budget process. So it was really refreshing to see a number of new people here today, and thank you for participating. I hope you'll come back in January, February, and through the end of the budget process so that we can continue having a discussion about what are the most important things to fund? Because we are funding things that are not in this budget, and that's because they're already being funded. I do want to point out that we're in this vote dedicating nearly $6 million for capital projects, maintenance projects, mostly in transportation, recognizing that we've fallen way behind on basic infrastructure maintenance. I will be bringing to council before the end of the year a resolution to remove the sunset on dedicating one-time funds to transportation, parks, and emergency management. I believe that we need to continue being very strict with ourselves about funding basic maintenance in the most urgent places first, and that's what this bump does. I do also very much support the police overhiring without having the funds. I do, I do support Chief Outlaw having the right to have somebody at her right hand who she knows and she knows has her back. And that's very important, and that shouldn't be done at the expense of demoting one of the assistant chiefs before Chief Outlaw has even gotten to know them. We saw that didn't go well with the previous chief. Very appreciative that it does include that $100,000 for Pioneer Courthouse Square that was accommodating of protests and other things and will continue to be so. $25,000 for Leech Botanical, and particularly Commissioner Fish, thank you for your leadership on Leech, and that is well on the way to being this jewel on the east side. So thank you, Mayor, for the way that this has been put together. Aye.
Fish.
Well, I want to thank my colleagues for clarifying what we are doing and what we're not doing and what we will be taking up through the normal budget cycle. I think that's very helpful. I want to acknowledge our budget advisors that are here with us today. We've been at the table and now are in the audience. And